I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
Bound for Glory is in the books. This is the post Bound for Glory PW Torch Livecast here at PWTorchLivecast.com. I am Mike McMahon, joined with Andrew Socek. We are normally with you on Thursday nights, but we are here after Bound for Glory 2017 on November 5th, 2017. Andrew, let's start off. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Would you recommend this show? If someone hasn't seen it yet, would you recommend that they go out of their way to order an on-demand version of it?
I would go thumbs up. Not overwhelmingly, especially kind of how things ended, but yeah, thumbs up.
We usually agree, but I'm going to go thumbs down. I did not like this show at all. I thought there were...
Oh, right on.
we'll get into what we liked and didn't like, I'm sure, as we go through the show. I thought a lot of the matches were flat. I thought a lot of the finishes were flat. I thought some of the execution was bad, and some of the booking was mind-boggling. But, I mean, that's sort of what we've become accustomed to, I guess, at times. We're going to take your phone calls at 515-605-9345. We can also get to your emails at impactlivecast@gmail.com. We might have a caller later on in the show who was actually in the arena tonight, which is going to be interesting because it felt like at times – I don't know if you thought the same thing, but it felt like at times that they were muting the crowd. Jimmy Jacobs and Sammy Callahan make their debuts on the show, and I thought the lack of reaction for both of their debuts was startling, to the point where I was like, and I think I even made the remark on Twitter, is the crowd muted? Is there something that I'm just not hearing? Because it didn't sound like there was any reaction for either of those two guys debuting, and I thought it was especially a stark contrast when you look at the reaction that Jacobs got at Ring of Honor just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. I thought so, too. I was very surprised. Like, did the fans in the arena not know? But, I mean, these are fans that paid to see the show, so you would assume that they're more into the product than the average fan in the Impact Zone is. So, yeah, I was very struck by that as well and felt bad for both of those guys.
Well, that was two of the happenings on the show. Let's run through it quickly, and we'll get to phone calls in a couple of minutes at 515-605-9345. But let's sort of just run through match by match, segment by segment, and give our quick thoughts on this show. They open the show with the six-way match for the X Division Championship. Trevor Lee, he retained the X Division title in about 13 minutes. He beat Desmond Xavier, Matt Sydal, Garza Jr., Sanjay Dutt, and Petey Williams. I thought that this was the best match of the night. The reaction to Petey Williams, I mean, Petey Williams was clearly the most over person on the roster. I thought he had the reaction of the night. The Canadian Destroyer was still the biggest pop of the entire show. And I thought this was a good opener. You know, I'm not always a big fan of these multi-man X Division matches, but I thought this was a pretty good opener, and I liked the finish here of Petey Williams hitting the Canadian Destroyer and then Trevor Lee throwing him out of the ring and stealing the win. I think they're going to be able to do something with that over this set of television tapings.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought it was pretty smart booking on their part. This is one of the rare occasions I would have been fine had Trevor Lee lost, just because of how over Petey Williams was. So that would have been maybe kind of fun, and then Lee can get it back down the road. But yeah, this is a good way to start the night. Throughout TNA's Impact's history, they've done a lot of these matches. Probably 90% of their pay-per-views have started out this way. And this was a pretty logical one. There wasn't a lot of crazy stunts, but there was some good action. And yeah, I thought it got the show off to a good start. And I could probably be talked into this being the best match as well. Yeah, I guess it was kind of downhill from the night in that aspect.
After that, they went to Ishimori returning from Pro Wrestling Noah, which I was happy to see. I liked his involvement in the tapings over the summer. And he beat Tyson Dukes in about 5 minutes. I thought this was another good match, you know, to be honest with you. I kind of wish they stuck with it more. I know we've both been a fan of crazy Laurel Van Ness, but they had cutaways here to Laurel Van Ness kind of going through the crowd and sitting with fans. And it never led to anything. It had nothing to do with this match. So I don't know why they needed to do the constant cutaways of Laurel Van Ness here. But I thought that was, you know, that kind of ruined it for me. It was a short match, but good match. And Ishimori gets the win. And I'm glad to see him back because I liked what they did with him over the summer.
Agreed. That was they went way too overboard on Laurel Van Ness here. I figured it was going to pay off in some form, like she was going to join one of these two. And it, especially for Tyson, this is a very, underwhelming debut. It's kind of a solid get. He's a, you know, a good talent who's never really been featured on the main stage in a meaningful role. So I thought it was going to be maybe a showcase match for him, but, just a quick job, and, half of what he did wasn't even seen. So, yes, definitely this was a miss on their part.
And then we got to Alberto El Patron. Alberto El Patron comes out, cuts a promo. It was pretty clear, I thought, from the very beginning that the crowd was not taking to him as a babyface. They were booing him from the second he came out. And I'm going to be interested if we do get a caller from someone who was in the building, I'm going to be interested in whether or not that was whether or not they did anything to set that up, or if that was just natural. You know, did he cut a promo on the crowd earlier before the show went on the air? Did they try to condition the crowd a little bit, or do they just naturally react to him as a heel? But El Patron came out and basically cut a promo on the Impact management, on the Impact fans, saying that they tonight should have been a happy night for him because he's back in Impact, but because of all he went through and the company turned his back on him, and he kept going over and over again about how he did nothing wrong, and the police report said he did nothing wrong. He said the company didn't care about him and his family, and it went on from there. He played up that he was going to attack Jeremy Borash, but ended up not doing so. Very, very interesting promo. You know, I know some people are going to react and say, hey, you know what, using a domestic violence investigation in your storyline is a little is not exactly the classiest of moves. I'm of the mindset that, hey, you know what, everybody knows what happened. I'm not as upset about that. You know, I thought the promo itself was rambling, and he lost me at points. But you know, I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I guess I'm not going to be as critical over the context of using the real life situation in the promo, because at the end of the day, I mean, everybody knows what happened.
Right. Yeah. I thought he had good intensity here. You know, there was, you know, they wrestling loves working in the real life aspect of things. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense. Cause if you look from a storyline sense, Bruce Pritchard is basically the one that kicked him out of the company. And Bruce Pritchard isn't there anymore. And Burnett didn't show up tonight. And Dutch Mantel didn't show up tonight. So I really hope they don't go management versus El Patron, or Borash versus El Patron in some form. So, yeah, kind of, I get them wanting to feature him just in some way, but this did go on too long. And I really wish he had not shown up at the end of the night in the way that he did.
Me too.
Yeah, it's frustrating to see him get this massive push again, because if something happens again, they're completely idiots more for not ever learning their lesson. So this could back to bite them big time.
Yeah, and that's the point. You know, you knew what you were getting initially when you signed him, and you had the situation that you had happen. Now he's coming back and you're pushing him right into the main event again. So guess what? If he does something stupid again, there's no excuse. Like you said, it's totally on you. I wasn't mm-hmm. a big fan of this being positioned as El Patron versus Impact Management, with Impact Management, you know, the ones that they're trying to position as the baby faces. I thought that was a little tacky, but I liked his intensity. At times I thought it went on a little bit too long, though. I thought he rambled at other points, but it was it was what it was. I'm okay with the context of the storyline of them using the real life situation, because people know what happened. But at least, you know what, we've talked about this in the past, at least they are bringing him back as a heel. If they tried to bring him back as a baby face, it just would have been a disaster.
Oh, God, that was awful.
Yeah. Then they went to Monsters Ball. Abyss wins in 11 minutes. I did not think this match was very good at all. To me, these Monsters Ball matches, these hardcore matches that TNA or Impact does, they do like one per pay-per-view, and they're all the same. You know, it's the same spots. Mm-hmm. There's Janus, there's Thumbtacks, there's Barbed Wire. It's the same thing over and over again. The one thing I'll say that I liked about this match, I thought that it was good use of Rosemary. You know, if she had to get taken off the card because Taya Valkyrie was having some, I think it was some immigration issues, then I thought this was good use of Rosemary. She has a little bit of a backstory there with Abyss. It made some sense. But other than that, I thought the match was slow. I thought the execution wasn't very good. I thought there were some missed spots and just not a very good match. And I know, I think I said the other night on Thursday that I thought this was my sleeper match, is one that could do real well, but man, was I wrong.
Yeah. Am I wrong, or did, when Abyss came out, his name said Allie on his entrance?
Oh, it may have. If it did, I didn't catch that, but it certainly, okay. there were some other okay. production issues as well, but...
I hope it happened. I didn't rewind it to watch it because on my computer hooked up to my TV, but I'm pretty sure I saw that, so I got a laugh out of that. You know, the more I talk about the show now, I was like a 6 in my mind, but now I'm kind of in the 4 range. So we'll see where I get by the time we're done reliving this. This was where it really struck me. Like, I don't think Abyss would be Abyss anymore. And I say that because if you watch his old matches, he could move good. Big man, he could run, he could all these you know, big man spots. Man, he's slow. He can kind of do an okay brawl, but man, if he's gonna stick around, he probably should just be Joseph Park and more of a compliment. And I've been saying that this entire year, that he should be this, you know, respected legend. And I guess if he does, he should only show up every 3 months, because he does not seem like he has too much in the tank at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're right. I noticed that too. He looked, you know, the one thing that kept coming through my head, and this was, you know, to a lesser extent, but he kind of reminded me of Mick Foley, of just a guy that at this point, he looked like he was having trouble just kind of walking around, you know, and look, he's mm-hmm. been through a lot. I mean, he's put his body through a lot. So it looked like he was having some struggles mobility wise, like you said. Then where do they go from there? Then they went to Team Impact versus Team AAA. Team Impact got the win in 16 minutes. I thought the dive spots in this match were kind of cool. You don't see James Storm do a swanton off the top very mm-hmm. often. But, oh, man, there were portions of this match that I thought were just going in slow motion. Pagano in particular, I thought looked like he was going through the motions. There was no pace to this match at all. You know, it looked like there was a couple mm-hmm. of times, honestly, where it looked like Phantasma was trying to pick up the pace a little bit and get some life going in the match. But Pagano just looked like he was completely disinterested in what was going on. Storm was okay. Eddie Edwards was pretty good. The tease of EC3 I thought was weird. You know, early in the match, he turns mm-hmm. his back and doesn't want to take the tag. And then literally 6 minutes later, he's begging for a tag and cleaning house and tagging James Storm back in and yelling at him to kick his head off, and celebrates by drinking beer when the match is over. Either the booking here was poor, and I thought that the match itself was just slow and kind of boring, it was kind of a theme for me throughout the show.
Yeah. I do that Josh Matthews at least tried to explain that, basically saying EC3 wanted to maybe, you know, try to win this all by himself.
Yeah.
I guess it still doesn't. Yeah. It still doesn't make a lot of sense in the end. Yes, I know that with Pagano as well. I wrote that in my notes that, man, he just like he was either just having an off night or a little sleep or didn't care or whatever it was.
He looked completely disinterested.
It's so weird when they say he. Yes. And when they say, like, they keep trying to say, like, well, he main event Triple Mania. I'm like, how did this guy do it? And I only know him through my experience through Impact, but what I've seen so far has not been impressive at all. I thought Storm, I think a lot of times James Storm comes off as kind of disinterested. I thought he was pretty good tonight. The match was, for me, fine. I probably liked it a little bit more than I did, but definitely, I hope it's the end of this awful, awful angle and everyone just kind of goes their own separate ways.
Yeah, and if it is the end, I think it's interesting because they did nothing to heal EC3. I mean, they did it at the beginning of the match, but the match ended with him celebrating with James Storm and drinking beer. So they didn't do anything to move him back into the heel, unless they just plan on going with him as a babyface and doing something else. But we were reminded that he's the Impact Grand Champion. I don't think we've seen that belt on TV in months. So that was back. Let's see. After that, we went to the 51-50 street fight for the tag team championships. OVE retained in 11 minutes. Sammy Callahan made his debut here, helping OVE get the win. I said it earlier, Sammy Callahan, the crowd barely reacted to him when he came out. I thought, you know what? I thought this match was pretty good too. I think I'd put this up there with the X Division match to start the show. Santana's dive off the scaffolding was crazy. I thought the Ortiz power bomb off the stage or the table was another, just really dangerous looking spot. And obviously the guys ended up being okay, but, good match until the end. I thought the finish was a little weird with people not responding to Sammy Callahan. I also thought that after the match ended, it kind of came across like, you know, was there a double turn that I missed somewhere? Because you've got Santana trying to cover up Ortiz, who's hurt and had just taken the pin, and OVE and Sammy Callahan are just tearing into both of them and laying boots on them, and Callahan grabbed the mic and cut a short promo, which I don't really understand much of what he said, but something about thumbs up, thumbs down, they're Ohio versus everything, and then again they threw the mic down at LAX and started put the boots to him again. Felt like going, man, are these guys baby faces or heels? So a little strange booking and strange that nobody seemed to care about Sammy Callahan debuting, but the match itself I thought was okay. You know, it wasn't great, but it was okay.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I will say it was either this or the opening match that was the best on the card for me. The thing I didn't like about it was that there was a chair shot to the head. There was a chair thrown right at the head. So that stuff, just I can't get into that stuff anymore. It immediately takes me out of the match. The other note I had is I always point out when Borash does a poor job of commentating. I thought he had a really lousy calls here. During that power bomb through the table, he just goes, "What a bad landing." And during that big drop, he just goes, "What a drop."
I like the I heard the "what a drop" and I said, "Oh well." That it was.
That should be an "oh my god." Like, yeah.
He fell.
I guess it was a drop, but
25 feet. It was quite the drop.
What a drop. Yep.
Then they went to the Knockouts Championship match. Gail Kim wins the Knockouts title in 10 minutes. She beat Sienna and Allie in a triple threat match. Good moment. You know, I thought it was the match was okay. The match kind of felt flat, like most of the matches on this show did. But a good moment for Gail Kim. The one thing I thought was weird about it is there's this big moment of Gail Kim's retiring. She's going to retire as champion. And within 10 seconds, they cut to American Top Team pre-tape in the back. Like, there was no time to sort of let that moment breathe. They had been building to it. They've been talking about it on the show for weeks. Gail Kim could win the title and retire as champion, and she's the biggest knockout the division's ever had. And now she's done it. You know, she's done the impossible, and we're gonna go right to American Top Team. Like, there was just there was no time to let it breathe. I thought that cutaway so quick was like just felt maybe they were short on time, and they needed to do something to get some seconds back if some of the matches earlier in the show went long. But for something that I think they built up that should have been a bigger moment, just kind of felt like, okay, now this happened, on to the next thing.
Yeah, I mean, ideally that's something you want to go back to in the coming years. You know, 5 years from now, when you show all these big Bound for Glory moments, you would show that and her celebrating with the crowd and streamers, and I don't know. But yeah, that stuck out to me too, that they just cut right away. And yeah, the match itself, fine. I mean, it was too bad because you could tell the crowd really wanted to get into it because potentially Gail Kim's last match and they wanted to see her win the title. It just seemed like it was kind of a reach in order to really invest yourself in that match because it was just, it was fun. Just not great. We've seen better matches in the past few months and for sure WWE's women's division. But yeah, it was just kind of there, unfortunately, for her potential final match.
Jimmy Jacobs then appeared on stage. He walked up to the announce desk, put on a headset. Jeremy Borash asked why he was there, because he doesn't work there. And Jacobs said to Jeremy Borash, "I don't work here. That's what you think." And then he walked off. So Jimmy Jacobs may be involved in Impact Wrestling now. Certainly seems that way. But again, the crowd, very little reaction. Kind of surprised. You know, just given the reaction he had at Ring of Honor a couple of weeks ago was so huge. And granted, you know, I think a lot of Jimmy Jacobs' opportunities now since he's been released is come because of that Bullet Club selfie. I mean, even Josh Matthews said, "Hey, I'm going to go," you know, jokingly said, "I'm going to go get a selfie." You know, if he was just Jimmy Jacobs was just let go from WWE in some cost cutting measure, you know, I don't know if he would have had the Ring of Honor return. I don't know if he would have been a big deal coming back into Impact here. I think a lot of it has sort of stemmed from that Bullet Club moment, the backstory of why he was released. But a little surprised that no one seem to care, at least in the live crowd.
Yeah, I felt really bad for him because I had read that he was potentially going to show up. So when I still saw him, I thought that was a pretty cool moment. And then, man, nobody was into that. Like, I just don't know if the crowd didn't know who he was or, yeah, I felt bad for him. I mean, I personally, I'm really hoping he's on the creative team. That's probably why I was more excited than anything. I mean, he could be a good division wrestler or whatever he wants to do, but much more excited for him to actually be on a creative team and bring some fresh ideas to this company.
Then they went to the Six Sides of Steel. King Mo and Bobby Lashley beat Stephen Bonner and Moose in 11 minutes. A lot of interference from American Top Team here. Sort of the same thing, Andrew. I thought this was just, it was a match. It was there. It happened. You know, I feel like with most of the stuff, most of the matches on the show just felt really flat, and this was kind of another one. Yeah. They did some MMA stuff. King Mo got busted open. Colby Covington, who made some waves the week before last at a UFC show in Brazil when he needed to be escorted out of the building by police because he basically, in the middle of a cage in Brazil, just ran down the entire country. He got involved and took some stuff from, I think, Moose. I think he took a big boot from Moose, but just a match that kind of felt like it was there. I was also a little surprised to see the heels win here, too, to see American Top Team win. I think they're probably going to stick around and do something at the tapings this week, I would assume.
I would think so too. Yeah, that'd be really strange to have them just run down wrestling the way they did and then disappear. But though, when in our predictions, I pointed that out as well, just saying like how it would be kind of stupid for them to win because that means wrestling basically sucks. And then that's what happened. I'm probably a minority here because I'm just looking over Jason Powell's review as well. He said it was a train wreck, which sounds about right. But I thought it was kind of an entertaining train wreck just because I didn't know how this was going to go. I was strangely fascinated by these guys exchanging MMA moves in the cage. I wouldn't say it was a good match, but I was kind of entertained by it, I will say. But it was definitely rough in a lot of spots.
Yeah, I thought, you know, the worked MMA stuff with Bonner and King Mo was interesting. I thought that was kind of cool. I also liked in the beginning of the match, it ended up being Moose and Lashley squaring off quite a bit. And I think Josh Matthews even pointed out that, hey, you know what? These guys are on different teams, but man, you know, they're showing that pro wrestling is standing tall right now over MMA. I thought that was smart to have the two MMA guys sort of get thrown to the side early and have it be Moose and Lashley squaring off, just to kind of show that, just to position yourself as the wrestling company, at least as an equal to MMA, was smart. I thought it was really smart.
Yeah. I kind of noted that too. I was thinking that those guys are never going to, Bonner and Kimo were never going to face off just because they kept teasing it. And then I thought, man, they must just be too sloppy, too green to be able to pull this off. And then they went at it. And I was like, huh, this is strange, interesting, because I thought their MMA stuff looked pretty good. I'm not a huge fan of MMA, but I thought what we saw here was interesting and definitely stood out from anything else we saw on the night.
Then from there, they went to. They went to an interview with Mackenzie Mitchell. She was interviewing Johnny Impact before his title match, and he gave a really awkward promo where he talked about his dad and what he gave up to be a pro wrestler, and something about his dad telling him it wasn't too late to go back to law school, if even after Bound for Glory. Here's my notes. My notes in my Impact report on PWTorch.com was, what, with a bunch of exclamation points and question marks. This was incoherent rambling more than it was a promo, and that's I don't know what he was saying. And that was obviously pre-taped. I don't know what producer watches that and goes, "Oh yeah, we can air that." I mean, it didn't make any sense. Not that Johnny Impact's interviews for the most part don't make any sense, but this even more than usual made no sense whatsoever.
Yes, I found myself laughing out loud because he has the worst delivery in wrestling, babyface. That I can think of, just the way he talks is so weird. It's not like cool weird. It's just weird. Like, why is he talking like that? And yeah, like you said, the promo was everywhere. This should be like John Cena building, right before his WrestleMania main event, why the title means everything and why he has to capture it, and not talking about his dad and why he could still be a lawyer.
It didn't even make sense.
It's rough. Yeah, that was rough. And it just, it's hard to like him, really. As a face. He's a good heel. He's done fantastic in Lucha Underground. I've said that a few times. But, man, he's rough as a babyface. And hopefully they figure that out soon.
Let me ask you this, too. During introductions for the world title match, they introduced Johnny Impact as being from Slamtown, USA, which is, like, corny on top of corny. Have they ever said that before? First time I noticed it was tonight. I don't know if they've always introduced him as being from Slamtown, USA. It sounds ridiculous. I just don't know if they've done it before or if this was the first time.
I caught that too. Not that I can recall, but yeah, man, it's just, like you said, super cheesy. I mean, The Rock didn't introduce him from the SmackDown Hotel or anything. He needs to drop that.
Yeah. What about that? Do they really think that sounds cool? A Slamtown U.S. Again, it's kind of like with the promo. It doesn't even make sense, because it's not like he's not known for slamming people. He's a high flyer. It'd be one thing if like his finisher was a running power slam or something, but like, does he slam anyone? Mm. Does any of his offense even involve a slam?
Does he even do a body slam?
I know.
That's a good point. I mean, it's one of those things I think sounds so stupid it works as a heel, but it's so stupid it doesn't work at all as a baby face. So I imagine he just like walked up to the Canadian announcer and just said, "This is where I'm from," and the guy's like, "All right, I'll do it." Like, he doesn't know any better and doesn't want to say that that's stupid, so they went with it.
Then we had the main event. Eli Drake retains the world title in about 20 minutes. But the story of this match was Johnny Impact was about to win the championship. And instead of him doing so, El Patron came in, pulled the referee out, knocked out the referee. He pulled the referee out, and Johnny Impact went to go make a dive. And El Patron got out of the way, and he took out the referee with the dive. So then El Patron attacked Johnny Impact, attacked Eli Drake with the Impact title. So he attacked both guys in the match. One of the things that was really gross about this was an unprotected chair shot to the head. There was a protected chair shot to the head from El Patron to Impact in the initial attack, and then after he rolled Impact in the ring, there was an unprotected chair shot to the head, which I looked like it was a plastic chair and not a metal one, because it just shattered into like four pieces. But still, even a plastic chair unprotected to somebody's head is insanely vicious, and I thought was gruesome. And totally not needed. But in any event, that led to the finish. He pulled Eli Drake over Impact, pulled the referee into the ring, and then counted the 1-2-3. So Eli Drake retains the championship, but did so with a lot of involvement from El Patron that I thought was unnecessary. I mean, the match itself didn't feel like a main event to the biggest show of your year, regardless. Mm-hmm. I thought that El Patron's involvement actually made it worse.
Oh, yeah. I think it made it much worse. Like, I was probably in the 3-star range for whatever this was, or leading to. Yeah. I mean, this company just never learns, no matter what. I mean, this is their WrestleMania again, and you don't ruin your main event of the show like this. It just leaves a bad taste in people's mouth, and especially because they are charging $40 to $50 for this show when WWE is not for theirs. So, I mean, when El Patron came in and just started beating them both up, I figured somebody else is going to come out and stop him, because you cannot position El Patron as the centerpiece of the company in 2017 after everything he's been through. So I thought maybe the lights would come out and Ricochet would come out or somebody. But no, they really just left it on a cliffhanger of what is El Patron doing and who is he going to feud with next. So yeah, the match I thought was pretty good, decent, and then a horrible, horrible ending, just a lousy way to end the show.
Yep, totally agree. I thought that the finish of the match was terrible. And like you said, mm-hmm. this is all to put over a guy who today was his first day back from suspension. You had to suspend him for something because he was involved in an investigation with police in an airport. I mean, it wasn't like you suspended him because of he failed the drug test, which is whatever, which that's not that that's better or good, but you're going out of your way to put over a guy that you just suspended. And it's this is literally his first day back from suspension. And you're going out of your way to put him over like this, and then just to end the show like that, and like it felt like just any old episode of Impact. The way the show ended, the mm-hmm. show ended. Eli Drake's in the ring. It looked like he was saying something to the referee. You know, I don't know. It could have just been nothing, but it looked like he was trying to get some sort of message to the official. And the show ends with El Patron, you know, smiling on the stage on the entranceway. And like I said, Jeremy Borash in a very unexcited tone just said, you know, what is El Patron doing? What is this all about? And then the show goes to a graphic mm-hmm. and it's off the air. For something that was supposed to be your biggest show of the year, something that was supposed to be your WrestleMania, it just didn't feel like anything special. Like, I don't know 6 months from now, which of these moments did we look back on and say, well, that was a big moment. You know, that moment at Bound for Glory was a big moment, and it set up this point where we are now. You know, what we're doing this the live cast on a Thursday night next June, what moment on this show are we looking back to and going, well, that set up this, and that kicked this story in motion? It doesn't feel like anything happened on this show. I mean, with the exception of maybe if El Patron gets in trouble again, we can say, well, that was the moment that they killed the company forever because they still insisted on pushing this guy. You know, it didn't feel like anything of consequence happened here the entire night.
I can't disagree with that. The thing, it's so frustrating to watch because 2 years from now, I'm going to doubt Alberto El Patron is going to be in the company one way or the other. I just don't see him in the company. Eli Drake 2 years from now should be their top guy. They should be trying to lock him in to a long-term deal. He should be pushed to the moon. He should be pushed as a much, much, much bigger deal as El Patron. I've said this before. El Patron's best year was what, 2011? He's the past. He's good, but he has so much baggage behind him. He's not exciting. If you see him as the centerpiece of the promotion, it just reeks of a guy who left WWE and is just no longer at the top anymore. So I invest in newer guys who have not been defined down so much. So it's frustrating to watch that again, even though, I mean, this is a new creative team. And so I was more excited, but it still ended in the same awful way that so many of their big shows have over the years.
Yeah, pretty much that pretty much sums it up for me too. All right, let's go to a break, and when we come back, we'll get to phone calls. And again, the number 515-605-9345. We do have to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to your phone calls talking Bound for Glory here in the PW Torch Livecast.
Thank you for being a PW Torch Livecast listener. As of mid-July 2017, the PW Torch Livecast lineup has undergone some changes. My shows have moved to a new feed, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available at Podcast One, or just search Wade Keller in your podcast app. But there's tons of great content every week, including Saturdays at 6 Eastern, the new Deep Dive with Rich Fan, covering a single topic in professional wrestling in depth. Join him live with phone calls at 6 Eastern every Saturday. Sunday nights at 8 Eastern, it is Wrestling Night in America with Pat McNeil and Greg Parks, where they focus on the supercards, the big events coming up in pro wrestling, or review the latest one. That's at 8 Eastern, or following a live pay-per-view, if there's a live pay-per-view on that Sunday. And then check out MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans every Monday night at 7 Eastern, hosted by Mike Hisko and other MMA Torch contributors. It's a chance for fans of both pro wrestling and MMA who share that in common to talk about the latest happenings in the world of mixed martial arts. Tuesdays, it's the best of PW Torch Livecast, a hand-picked episode from our history that gives you a chance to catch up on a show you might have missed back in our earlier years. And then the PW Torch Nostalgia Hour with Jim Valley is back. It used to be called Saturday Morning Wrestling. Now it's Wednesdays at 5 Eastern. He takes your live calls and interviews some of the big names from pro wrestling's past. And then Thursday nights, following GFW Impact, it's Mike McMahon and Andrew Sochak with a recap of the just-concluded Impact Wrestling show on Pop TV. So as soon as Impact goes off the air in the United States on Pop TV, join Mike and Andrew live right here at pwtorchlivecast.com. They'll be taking your calls. That's the new lineup of the PW Torch Livecast. Great diverse mix of shows with a great group of hosts. Keep listening and keep spreading the word, and give us a 5-star rating over at iTunes with some kind comments in the listener comment section about which shows you like and why. That's PW Torch Livecast, new lineup. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast, the phone number 515-605-9345. Let's go to our first caller, Andrew, and this caller is from area code 615. 615, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, this is Kenny from Gallatin, Tennessee, and I'm going to have to be on your side, Mike. I did not like the show at all. I mean, I have to give it a thumbs down, but there were some interesting moments for me. Obviously, the return of Alberto El Patron was in a kind of a way of shock, as was Sami Callihan and Jimmy Jacobs to an extent. I didn't expect him to be involved whatsoever, but he did. The only disappointing thing about that whole Alberto El Patron return was that I was kind of actually hoping that he would have attacked Forrest, and we could have gotten a surprise, like, you know, Tony Schiavone.
That's what I thought.
Hey, I'm just going to call him.
Yeah.
That's funny you bring that up. That's where I thought it was leading.
Yeah, because he's been doing more of the play-by-play. He's been participating with MLW, and that podcast he has with Conrad Thompson is, not to be like a shameless plug, but it's really kind of brought him back to the wrestling landscape. And Borash, I did the best I could, just, you know, tolerating him the best I could. But that main event was really what finally just drove me over the edge and finally hit the mute button on him on that. But Alberto El Patron was just, it was just so all over the place. Him and Johnny Impact, it was just more and more of what has been Impact from day one. That is taking disgruntled WWE stars and elevating them, or trying to place them in positions that at the end of the day, no matter how much they try, just always fell flat. And it happened again in the main event. And the main event was just, it was just so hard to watch because it was just so lackluster, and just the fans in general, I was really disappointed with the way that the fans reacted throughout most of the show. It really just brought the show down to such a level and extent, especially because I thought the quality of the look of the show was really good. That's one of the key positives I have on the show, was the production side actually looked pretty good in comparison.
That's a good point on the crowd. Andrew, you know, I thought the crowd reaction for the X Division match was good to open the show. The crowd was hot at the beginning. They were really behind Petey Williams. And then I don't know, you know, there was a couple of chants that I couldn't really make out. I don't know if they were chants that they didn't want people to hear. But it almost, either the crowd was completely dead after that, or they messed around with the audio and they muted them. It was one or the other. You know, because it definitely, I agree with you, Kenny. It was good at the start, and then all of a sudden it seemed to completely die out. Andrew, did you notice that too? I mean, I don't know if they were necessarily playing with the audio, or if it was just that the crowd wasn't into what was going on in the ring. But it sounded like they didn't have more energy as the show went on. They had considerably less energy as the show went on.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, like you said, Petey Williams got the biggest pop of the night. He was treated as a hero. I thought they were pretty lively for OVE LAX, but I didn't feel that was because they were really in support of one team. It was just more the spectacle. Main event, they were pretty flat, but I guess, you know, Eli Drake is a good heel. Johnny Impact is not so great of a face. So I just feel they didn't have a lot of people they wanted to cheer for, and probably were just there more for the novelty of the show than anything. So it was a pretty rough night for the crowd, I thought.
Yeah, just from watching the show, it reminded me so much of, it was almost like going into a time warp and watching the WCW pay-per-view from late 1999 into 2000 in terms of how the matches were going. And you guys were talking about it on the hardcore matches. And I got to tell you, I was really turned off by the Abyss Grotto match, because it's just like unprotective, you know, shots to the head with heavy metal objects and, you know, just the unprotective chair shots to the head. I mean, with CTE and everything we know about it. And, you know, these guys are experienced guys in terms of booking promotions, like Scott D'Amore. They should know better. They should know that this is like what has happened to their friends and colleagues from the days of ECW. And they should know better, that that's just not acceptable in today's pro wrestling, or that's just not tolerable. But, you know, I assume it's still done in the indie scene to some extent, but that just really threw me off. And obviously that match was, you know, the Grotto Abyss match was definitely, in my opinion, the worst match of the night. As far as what I thought was the best match of the night, a little bit of a shocker, but I did like how the Gail Kim Sierra Alley match set up, because it did tell a story of, you know, the pretty much the end of Gail Kim's career, even though they cut it short. But that's just how, unfortunately, that's just kind of how it is in pro wrestling, is that there's not really that much time to celebrate. I know WWE has been guilty of it in the past in some aspects of wrestling, not always, but to some extent. But that's just, I just kind of write it off as, well, it's just pro wrestling.
No, you're right. Now, you know, there could have been things that we just don't know too. Like I said, they could have been crunched for time and they needed to get some time back on some other areas because they were running late. I agree with you on the Grado Abyss stuff and the gratuitous violence, the chair shots to the head. Even we talked about the El Patron Johnny Impact chair shot as well, or two of them in the main event. It's funny, or not funny, but it's striking in that, you know, you hear, I've heard Eric Bischoff on a number of interviews lay out how when he was first given the Nitro time slot, he decided that he couldn't be better than WWE or WWF at the time, and he didn't want to be worse, so he needed to figure out ways to be different, and that was a big contributing factor, he thought, in why they succeeded, because he made this, you know, famous list on a piece of paper of everything that was different or that he could do to be different. The WWE was taped, so he was going to go live and all this other stuff. It seems like with TNA at times and Impact now, they've gone over the top with the violence at times, with chair shots to the head that are unprotected and blood and stuff like that. And it almost feels like they are looking at that and going, well, this is our way to be different than WWE, which is completely tone deaf. There's other ways to be different that isn't putting someone's long-term health in danger. Because like you said, Kenny, with everything we know now, to watch guys take unprotected chair shots to the head doesn't make me go, ooh, and ah. It doesn't make me go, wow, you know, that guy has guts. It just makes me sit there and go, wow, that's stupid. Like, they're stupid for putting themselves in that position and agreeing to it. And maybe more importantly, whoever's in charge is stupid for letting that happen. Like, at the end of the day, like you said, Scott DeMore or somebody in charge needs to say, no, this isn't what we're doing. And for all we know, it could have been the idea of somebody in charge. And I would almost think that that's more than likely the case, that it was the idea of somebody in charge, and the guys in the ring are trying to be company guys and don't want to lose their job or lose their spot, and they go along with it. And if that's the case, even more so shame on them, because like you said, it's not that we don't know whether it's football players, whether it's other guys in wrestling that have had issues with their brains. This is not something that's unknown. This is proven at this point that stuff like that has a serious adverse effect on people's long-term health, and allowing that to happen is inexcusable in my mind.
Just summed it up right there. I've got a couple of quick notes. One little funny note. There was a guy that had a sign on there said that, you know, kind of referencing to what had happened with the law. I'm sure you guys are aware, but live audio wrestling was pretty much shut down. Why is it? Because of the cost, and obviously because Anthem is putting so much into Impact that the guy basically, I don't know if I had it word for word, it's like, nothing will be greater than the law, which I thought was, you know, kind of like a rib to them. And also, I want to get your guys' thoughts real quick on the rest situations. You know, there was a lot of people that go over the course of the week, and most surprisingly enough, most of them were all officials. You know, the Hebners are gone, and several others. So that's really all I had to say. And you guys have done a good job so far, and thanks for taking my call, and have a good rest of the night.
Thanks, Kenny. You too. Andrew, what were your thoughts on all that stuff this week? Because we heard it, you know, with the officials, and none of the regular officials were on the show. I know, I think we talked about it on Thursday. I don't remember, but I think we talked about it on Thursday that I know there was an issue with tax credits in Canada. They needed to use so many Canadians on the show in order to be eligible for some entertainment tax credit, which was part of the reason why the officials weren't going to be brought in. And of course, a lot of them then just decided that they wanted to sever ties with the company, like we saw. But what was it was actually funny, because it was at one point in one of the matches, I think it was in the was it in the Grado match and with Abyss, where the bell rang early.
Oh, yeah.
So that, I thought that was a little funny, given the circumstances. But, I mean, for the most part, it kind of makes sense that with your official, especially, you don't know if those guys have been along for a while, you don't know what they're making for pay for a company that's trying to trim expenses. It kind of makes sense to go with some officials that maybe aren't going to cost you as much money.
Yeah, it makes sense financially. I did notice, I think during the Sienna match as well, there was a weird, like the ref didn't count and she yelled at him. I don't know if that was in character, if she was actually like frustrated, like, why aren't you counting? The other ref kind of stood out to me too, because he just seemed like he was like 21.
Yeah, I put on Twitter at one point, who's the 14-year-old kid officiating this match?
He probably needed to turn down his facial expressions by about 35%, I would say, just watching him. I harp on this all the time, but just from like a character perspective, it would have been nice had they been like, hey, this is Earl Hebner's last show, and actually like brought him out there. He's 68. He's been in TNA, I think, for like 10 years. He's been part 68? Of storylines. Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been watching him lately, like just try to get up off the mat, and he kind of clutches at his knee, and it made me a little sad. But anyway, he's getting up there. It would have been just nice had they given a couple of their longtime refs one final show, or I don't know, just some sort of segment to say, hey, this is Earl Hebner's last match ever, but was not meant to be. They needed to cut money where they could, and we will never see him again, probably, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it would seem that way. I think they're going to go with local referees from now on. It would sort of make sense. Let's go to another break.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say he was born in 1949. He is 68.
Wow. You know what? I hope I can move like that when I'm 68.
No doubt.
Sometimes I have trouble moving like that now. Let's go to the break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Bound for Glory and also some other news coming out this week on some other cost-cutting measures that Impact may be undergoing, including potentially moving their headquarters up to Canada, which, of course, was the site of tonight's show. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more on the PW Torch livecast.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, back in the PW Torch livecast. Andrew, I wanted to talk. I saw this earlier today. I think it was PW Insiders. I think it was Mike Johnson. But it was definitely PWInsider.com had a report that the words going around that Impact is going to, or that Anthem is going to be moving the Impact headquarters and consolidating everything up in Canada in their offices up. I think they're, I don't know if they're in Toronto or if they're in Ottawa or wherever they are. But he had a report that the Nashville office was likely going to close soon, and those people would either move to Canada, wherever Anthem's offices are, or they would potentially become, you know, satellite employees and work from home. But what's your reaction, I guess, to that news? Because it seemed to me that that was something that was going to be coming at some point. It didn't make any sense for them to pay for these office space in Nashville when, you know, the company doesn't need to be there.
Yeah. We've been talking about this on and off for months, and it sucks that people have to lose their jobs. But if they want to stay afloat, it's probably the right decision. It's good in a bunch of ways. It's good from that cost cutting measure. It's good for them to finally get out of the Impact zone. They've been there for far too long. We've seen the same people over and over again. It just feels flat and boring. They were definitely ready for this move, I would believe it. But it is unfortunate that it's already caused so many problems. I mean, Taya Valkyrie wasn't able to make the show. Taryn Terrell wasn't able to make the show. I imagine we will be seeing other Border City Wrestling wrestlers, basically just cheaper wrestlers in the promotion over the coming months. So, but I think for their long-term survival, it was probably the right move. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's what I think, too. You've got a company that they're spending money for office space in Nashville because Dixie Carter lived in Nashville. And then even to a certain extent as well, Jeff Jarrett lived in Nashville. That is not the case now. Jarrett's not involved. Dixie, I know I saw her on Twitter this week reference that she's still technically an owner of TNA an owner of Impact. But there's no need really for them to be in Nashville. There isn't, you know, especially when they're owned by a company that has office space elsewhere. For a company that doesn't have a whole lot of revenue streams and doesn't have a whole lot of ways to make money, to be spending money on office space in Nashville, Tennessee, when you have office space in Ontario up in Canada, it doesn't make any sense to be spending that money. So I think it makes sense for them to move their offices there from a business standpoint. I also, you know, I wonder what's going to happen this week from their tapings. I mean, we saw the pay-per-view tonight. They said it was sold out. I know, at least right now, the TV tapings aren't. So if they can draw a decent enough crowd, you know, do they move out of the Impact Zone altogether and start taping at a place like Aberdeen Pavilion or elsewhere? Maybe they can find, you know, we've talked about this before, but maybe they can find, they usually do what, 6 or 7 tapings a year? Maybe they can find 6 or 7 cities that they can go to once a year and draw on a set on a set of TV tapings. And they don't even need to make money on it. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they go to Orlando, they rent the soundstage. They can't charge for admission, so they make nothing. I mean, they're in the red before they even get there. So at least in this scenario, in Ottawa this week, they're charging tickets, and if the tickets just break even with what the building rental is, they already come out ahead. than what they would be if they were in Orlando. So it makes sense, I think, to try to get out of the impact zone. And then we saw tonight, you know, if you give the crowd something that they're into, because that crowd was into Petey Williams, if you give them something that they're into, yeah, they're going to give you a better reaction than you'll get from that Orlando crowd that's just has. If they're fans, they've been watching it for years and they've seen everything. And if they're not fans, then they just don't care.
I had that same thought too. Like they wanted to be entertained. They wanted to cheer for all these wrestlers. But I think as the show went on, it's like, oh yeah, EC3 is cool, but his character kind of sucks right now. James Storm, yeah, he's not so great right now. I mean, good talent, but the booking has been so poor. So yeah, I think it'd be fun for them to go to new towns and actually, you know, try to build momentum that way. I wanted to touch on something else when you were just talking about revenue streams. I emailed about this before, and they mentioned it on the show, but we got 3 free months for their global network by ordering this show, which is kind of cool, but they probably should have mentioned that beforehand to try to get people to order the show. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I had the same reaction as you. I got an email yesterday that said, hey, because you've ordered it through the Fight app, you have 3 free months to the Global Wrestling Network. No clue that that was a thing. That was absolutely something they should have been advertising. I don't know, you know, if it was because – I wonder if it was because it was through the Fight app. I wonder if – I was thinking about this after we emailed. Are they contractually – were they afraid of getting their pay-per-view providers upset for pushing people to the Fight app? So that's why they mentioned it on the pay-per-view tonight, because everybody would have already ordered at that point. But yeah, that's the only thing I can think of is maybe there was an issue where they didn't want to upset pay-per-view partners by pushing people away from ordering it on pay-per-view.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah, but I wonder how many people even order it off traditional pay-per-view anymore.
I don't think
that's
a lot.
Even more expensive.
Yeah, I don't think many. I mean, and then there's also the fact that who knows what the buy rate is. I mean, TNA's, when they were doing their monthly pay-per-views, their buy rates were, if you believe the numbers that I think had been reported, floating in the neighborhood of like 5,000 buy. I mean, really, really low.
Right. Yeah. And this, I mean, I've touched on this before, but man, I mean, the fact that this is $40 to $50 and WWE is $10 basically to get a pay-per-view. I really wonder how many people are ordering these shows at all. And so anything they can get to entice people, I mean, that's basically $24 for free to get their network for 3 months. So I think that would have, they should have maybe just risked it, I don't know, and announced that beforehand.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is you get some other things through the Fight app. Like I think I got like a $12 credit for some future orders. So even then it only cost me, it only cost me like $28 because I've got $12 in credits that I'll use on something else. So that'll be, and I would imagine that they probably, I mean, this is just a guess, but I would assume that they get a bigger share on orders placed through the Fight app. And I think, you know, I think I've been told that the traditional cable takes usually about 50% right off the top. So if the price point's $50, Impact's getting $25 from that order. I would think that the streaming is probably more in their favor, but, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, their future is definitely online. It's curious. I'll be curious to check out this network. I haven't done it yet, but we'll see if it's worth the potential $8 a month, I guess.
Yeah, overall, though, I mean, as we kind of wrap up here, I just – if this was the biggest show of the year, they have problems because nothing felt big, really. Nothing really felt big. I don't know. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around, you know, feeling good about spending money on this show, and I'd have a hard time recommending people to do the same because the problem with it, I think, is you could miss this show altogether. Let's say you watch Impact every single week. You could miss this show, tune in on Thursday, and not feel like you missed much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I think I've talked myself to a 5 out of 10. I basically, and I think this is probably grading on a curve just because the past 3 weeks of Impact have been so amazingly awful. Last week's, I guess, was almost okay, but the 2 weeks before that were just atrocious. And just the fact that they put something together that was semi-competent, I think I gave them extra points for this. It was nice seeing them in a different crowd. But again, that's not worth $40 in this era. It'd be nice if they could, you know, if this cost like $10 or something. I mean, I know you get some free stuff, but that's not quite the same. So, yeah, no, I get what you're saying. The surprises were nice. It was nice to see Sami Callihan. It was nice to see Jimmy Jacobs. However, both of them did not get very good reception, so there was that awkwardness there. So let me ask you, though, are you somewhat optimistic about the coming months or still just not optimistic at all about how things are going?
It's funny. I was actually going to ask you that same question because this is the first show that we really have with the new – I mean, gee, it feels like there's a new booking committee at every freaking taping.
Yeah. But,
this is, again, you know, the first show that the Scott D'Amore, Sanjay Dutt, John Gaborik team has written on their own from what we understand because Jeff Jarrett was still involved in the last set of television tapings. That – this show – being their debut doesn't have me excited for what the rest of this week's tapings is going to bring. And this week's tapings are going to bring us through the end of the year. And, you know, I guess from that standpoint, it has me nervous. Yeah, because I didn't like this show. I thought there was a lot of things. I thought there were holes. I thought there were some booking things that just didn't make any sense. I'm down enough on this show that if they have TV tapings like this over the next 6 weeks and or the next 6 days or 5 days, however long they're there, and the next 2 months of TV are similar to this show, it's going to be a long couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to be interested in what they build to as well, because the last couple of years, that first Impact in January has always been built as a big one. It's usually been live.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the first or second one, but first or second Thursday in January. But they've always built one of those first few episodes in the month of January. They usually tape a set of TV in January, and that first episode is aired live. And, you know, it's what they build to next. They've been building to Bound for Glory for a while. Their next stop has always been a pretty big episode of Impact, the beginning of January, a live episode, and that's what these next set of tapings are going to build to. But I just don't feel confident that they're going to do a lot of interesting things based upon the results of this pay-per-view.
Yeah. It's probably better to be pessimistic. I'm usually very, very pessimistic, but I quickly wrote down a couple things that I'm that could be okay. I like that Eli Drake still has the title. I'm glad Johnny Impact doesn't have it right now. I didn't like the way things played out.
That's a good point. I don't like the finish, but I agree with you there.
I like that. Maybe there's some potential in LAX as faces. We'll see how that goes. If that was a face turn, and I sure hope it was because they blew their noses in their flag and beat them up while one of them, well, I think Ortiz was trying to cover Santana or vice versa. So maybe LAX's faces will be interesting. I don't know.
So you did take that the same way as me, though, right? Because it looked like it was a double turn.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely saw it that way. I mean,
so did I.
Especially because he blew his nose. Yeah, that's hard to come back from if you blow their nose in their flag.
Yeah.
In their flag. I mean, I think Shawn Michaels did that to the Canadian flag years ago.
He did.
Not a good move.
It's just, and it's weird too.
Trevor Lee still has. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it's weird that we talk about the execution of some of the things that they did tonight. The fact that we have to sit here and discuss whether or not that was a double turn. Like, it was so inconspicuous. We're like, are we sure that's what it was? I think that's a problem. You know, that's a problem that we watch a show and you're like, well, I don't know. It may have been. I don't really understand.
And that's on, I mean, I don't remember what the announce team said during this part, but they should have been, oh my God, that is way too far. What is wrong with these people?
Totally
they
agree.
Won. Like, lay off of them.
Totally agree.
And I'm pretty sure Jeremy Borash didn't do that.
No, he didn't. And they did do that when El Patron first came out. Praise the announcers a little bit. When El Patron first came out and the crowd was booing him and he hadn't even started his promo yet, so you didn't even know what he was going to say, Jeremy Borash was already sort of laying the groundwork for a heel turn, going, you know, like, what is this guy? What does he have to say? Come on now. And then as he rambled a little bit, you know, Borash was like, is anyone going to cut his mic? Like, you could tell they were laying the groundwork to let you know that this is, he's not just being, you know, aggressive. This is a heel turn. If that was supposed to be a double turn, you're right. I figured they would have done something similar there, but they didn't do it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Borash is bad tonight. Usually he's terrible. I think maybe he was a little more excited than usual. Maybe just being in a new place, or maybe he's more confident about the company's future. But he did a couple of things right tonight. But yeah, he still will just – I don't know if he'll ever be able to nail the big call, and he misses so many – obvious things, but back to being positive again. Trevor Lee still has the belt. I mean, we complained all year pretty much how underutilized he was. So it is good that somebody back there recognizes his talent a little bit. Still underutilized, but nevertheless. And then Jimmy Jacobs being brought in, if he's in creative, then I will be slightly optimistic about this company. But yeah, if it's John Gaborik's still running this ship, and if it's anything like the last month of TV, then, oof, like you said, it's going to be just tough these next few months until they figure something out, maybe, or just keep on losing viewers.
Yeah, I agree with both Jimmy Jacobs. If he's brought in to work with creative, that's a good sign. What do you think of Jimmy Jacobs working on the announce team? Now, I'm not a big fan of three-man booths, but they clearly had three headsets because he put one on. Mm-hmm. And the interaction with Jeremy Borash saying, like, oh, I don't work here, huh? Like, I don't know why you have that first interaction be with Jeremy Borash unless Jimmy Jacobs is taking over the Pope role.
That's what I thought, too. And I thought he was going to jump on right away. I don't know if I've ever heard him on commentary. He seems like a smart guy. I met him once. He was seemed very knowledgeable about the business in general. That was a few years ago. But yeah, I mean, I would like to see him. God, I would take probably anybody in that role just somebody who is cool. I mean, he seems like a cool guy, unlike Matthews and Borash. I would be fine with a three-man booth in there. And heck, I would take Tony Schiavone over Borash. So maybe let's do Tony Schiavone, Jimmy Jacobs, and just run with it for a while.
Yeah, I agree. I'm now back at the point that we were in, you know, February and March, where this announced team stinks. I mean, at least in February and March, they stunk because they did nothing but argue with each other. Now they stink just because they're just not very good. Like you said, I think especially when and look, maybe they just don't have any money, but when there's Jim Ross who's out there and he's unemployed. And you would think, I mean, I know Jim Ross doesn't want to work a full-time schedule. He doesn't want to travel 52 weeks a year. Well, guess what? In Impact, you don't have to. You know, he probably doesn't have to, he wouldn't probably have to travel any more than he has to travel doing New Japan stuff with Access Television right now. Six or 7 weeks, you know, 6 or 7 tapings a year, and that's it. So, and maybe they just don't have the money to afford him. I mean, he's obviously, you know, doing some stuff with WWE now, too. But, there's just, anybody. I mean, there's.
Yeah, anyone. Just take a chance on somebody. They cannot, like, find some old wrestler. Like, I can't remember the guy's name, but whoever did it at Slammiversary, he was just as good as Jeremy Borash. And he did it one time ever.
Yeah, Rob Florio, I think, from either ESPN or MLB Network or something like that.
Yeah, so just find an old wrestler, an old manager. See what Armando Alejandro Estrada is up to. See if he wants to try out. I don't know. Just grab any Val Venus. I don't care. At somebody. Somebody can do a better job than these two.
There was a rumor going around, and he actually addressed it on his podcast this week, denying it. But there was a rumor going around that Cyrus may be brought in, Don Callis, to be part of the announced team, which I'd be.
That would have been interesting.
That'd be fantastic. I don't know where the report originated from, but I know that he had addressed it on his Killing the Town podcast this past week and said that he's not under contract with anyone and would not be at Bound for Glory, and he was not. But, you know, it may be in the future. I don't know if that's something that might be happening in January or at some point later on. But I wouldn't be opposed to that. He's really, really good. I don't know if you've seen him or any of his New Japan commentary, but I think he's really, really good with the English commentary on New Japan.
Yeah. Very interesting guy as well. I like his podcast from what I've heard. Yeah, that would be a huge upgrade if they could bring in him and just, I don't know, Jimmy Jacobs. I don't know. Does he do much play-by-play?
He's more the color guy, but...
Okay, that's my thought.
Yeah, I just think and he'd be good on a creative committee as well. You know, Jimmy Jacobs and Don Callis, I think, could book the show, and I'd be okay with that. Another, you know what? Speaking of, and this is off topic, but another guy that I think is really underrated from a booking standpoint is his partner there, Lance Storm. I've been a big fan of Lance. I find myself when Lance Storm talks about things and the way things are booked, and just general ideology on the way wrestling should be presented, I find myself nodding in agreement quite a bit. And when you look back and consider that, you know, he was one of the guys in ECW that was booking with Paul Heyman. You know, him, Raven, and Tommy Dreamer were three guys that were booking ECW for big stretches. I've heard him tell stories in interviews where, you know, towards the end of his run at ECW, Paul was so busy with other things that he would show up to a show and look at Lance and Tommy Dreamer and say, what are we doing tonight? You know, the day of a taping. What are we doing tonight? So he's a guy. I don't think you'd ever get him to move out of Calgary, but he's a Canadian. And if you move your offices to Canada, you know, I'm a firm believer that especially your creative team, they don't all need to be in the same place. You know, we record this show on Skype. Skype's a thing. Like, you can get on on a conference, a three-way video conference, and still book the same way you would if you were three people sitting in a room. So, I think there are some people they should try to consider, because I'm not a big fan of the creative they have, I think would be to put it nicely.
Yeah, and when Jeff Jarrett came back, they were reaching out to, of course, Bruce Pritchard. He came in, and he also reached out to Vince Russo. Just I think to check his download numbers to compare who would be the better one to bring in. So they are aware of this podcast world. So yeah, I mean, Cyrus and Lance Storm and Raven has his own one. God, just take those three right now and put them as the lead bookers of the show. But I don't know, probably not going to happen. But it'd be fun to think about. And if that fails, you and I are always available. So
of course, we've mentioned that before. We're ready to go in as soon as we're needed. The team is in need. We'll help them.
Yep.
But you know, Vince Russo, man, if they brought in Vince, that might be.
Oh, my God.
I'd probably watch it for a few weeks just to see what, you know. It's a sickness, of course, but you see a car wreck.
Right.
People don't look away. So I'd probably watch it for a few weeks just to see, you know, what absurdity happens. But over the long haul, if Vince Russo was actually brought back in to run the show, the creative, I think that would. I'd give it a month before I hand my resignation letter in to Wade and just be like, Wade, I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry. I can't object myself to this on a weekly basis and keep my sanity. Not to sound too much like Jim Cornette, but that why do I got to make myself angry in my own home?
No, I get it. You know what? I will say, and this is the bottom of the barrel, I would take Vince Russo over what we've saw on TV the past month, where it was just random matches in different places that had nothing to do with anything.
In 7,000 video packages.
Yes. I will take Vince Russo over that, but give it 2 months before I hand in my resignation.
They were practically showing us video packages about other video packages. That's how many video packages they ran. Yes. All right. Well, we have talked a lot about Bound for Glory. And I think, you know, I think I'm with you. I think I'm in that like 4 to 5 out of 10 range. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't too excited about much of this. So anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I don't think so. The show was better than I thought it was going to be, but that was only because of how bad TV had been. I was bracing myself for a 2 out of 10 and maybe got a 4 or a 5, maybe a 5. But yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it is Andrew Souck. I'm over at PW Podcast as well, putting up new recaps every day. We got a ton of great writers out there sending in new stuff. We put up a couple episodes of Something to Wrestle over the past couple days. Check that out. It's about The Rock. Got a part two about No Mercy 1999, Killing the Town we have up there. So lots of great stuff. Check out pwpodcast.com.
Killing the Town was really good this week. I was just listening to that a couple of days ago with Mark Madden. Mark Madden.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, Mark Madden, a former PW Torch columnist. From a long time ago. But if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at Mike McMahon PW. And that's about it. This is a special edition of the PW Torch Livecast post Bound for Glory. You could check out the Wrestling Night in America episode taped earlier tonight with Pat McNeil and Greg Parks. They were on the air during Bound for Glory. And there will be shows throughout the week, of course. And Andrew and I will be back with you on Thursday in our regular time slot when Impact goes off the air. So we do not have a VIP after show tonight because it is a Sunday, but we will have a VIP after show on Thursday. We do a VIP after show on the Thursday live cast exclusively for PW Torch VIP members. If you're not a PW Torch VIP member, well, you should be. And Wade Keller is going to tell you more about that in just 1 second. But thanks for calling in to the live cast. Thanks for listening to this special edition of the PW Torch live cast post Bound for Glory. And Andrew and I will talk to you Thursday night, right when Impact goes off the air.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is life.